The following is an encore episode of Convergence with Michelle McAloon and Ellen Taylor. On this episode, Ellen and Michelle talk with Ed Penton about the passing of Queen Elizabeth. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Convergence, where we dive into issues of faith and culture. I'm Ellen Taylor alongside Michelle McAloon, my co-host. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
Oh, been a good week. Got a touch of fall in the air here in Lower Alabama, which means we're not sweating at 100% humidity. So
Very good. Yes. And Europe is dashing into winter. I don't understand it.
We've got a special guest with us today. Because this was an interesting week with the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, and we thought we needed some perspective from across the pond, as they say over here. Joining us is Edward Penton. He is the Rome correspondent for the National Catholic Register, owned by EWTN, and he's been a great voice on the Catholic world stage of writing of issues of importance. Thank you, Edward, for coming on with us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Edward, this has been a momentous moment in history, is the passing of this monarch. And you know what? You, as a British subject, we would like to extend our condolences for the passing of your monarch. And you write a very moving tribute to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. You say that her office was mostly spiritual, and I think many Americans would actually not understand that point of view. Can you explain that to us?
Sure. Well, it's really a fusion between the spiritual, of course, and the secular, because she was the ruler of the country and the Commonwealth. But it has a very much a spiritual element to it. Which really dates back to when the monarchy was Catholic. I mean, when it was Catholic, there was this belief in the divine right of kings, of course. So the whole coronation ceremony is profoundly Catholic, really, and liturgical. It's all about the anointing, that the authority that she's given, that the monarch is given, comes from God. And my sense was that the Queen really understood that extremely well, and she obviously took her coronation oaths very seriously. But she really understood the responsibility that comes with those oaths, and that responsibility, which, as I say, is fundamentally a spiritual one. So she took it very seriously because her faith was very serious. She took her faith very seriously, and it was a very deep faith. And so I think all that together is what made her very special and I think loved by many people, even though, of course, the monarchy has not been Catholic for 400 years now. But even so, there's that element that remains, which dates back to the Catholic Church.
That's a really interesting perspective, and I think one we overlook here in the United States. We don't dive into history enough a lot of times to recognize and look at the deep roots of especially monarchs and the impact of faith that had on their reigns throughout history. The press today in the latter half of the 20th century and the 21st century was more concerned with, the gossipy end of it. What's the royal family doing? Where are they at this week? What are the children and grandchildren and scandalous events they're in? And they completely disregard this element of the spiritual leader of a nation that you rightfully pointed out. And so I think that's why when you brought up that approach in your article, that a lot of Americans would go, there's something to do with church in here. That you are in London, how have the people there responded to this? And do they recognize this traditional balance that you're talking about that we don't see so often here in the press?
Yes, well, I'm actually in Rome, but I wish I were in London.
Okay.
It'd be nice to be there. But I think most people understand this, even if they don't understand it consciously. I think there's an element of understanding that the monarchy does have that deep alignment with something bigger than just an institution. It's something bigger than government. It goes beyond that. And even though the country is getting more and more secular, it's really in many ways profoundly secular, it's been Protestant, as I say, for 500 years. And so it's sort of, it's left that that understanding. And there's a lot of ignorance about the faith in England, sadly, which is surprising in the sense that there is still this great love for the monarchy and an understanding about just how deep it goes. And I think they see it as fulfilling a sort of religious element in a way, which it does. And it's a very unifying element. It's a very stabilizing institution, the monarchy. And I think that in large part comes from that spiritual element to it. Not all of it. I think a lot of it has to do also with the constitution, the English constitution. It's been devised in such a way through lots of acrimony in the past, including the Civil War, so that the parliament has basically sovereignty over the nation. That is the key part of the government. That's what really has the power. And the Queen is more of an honorary head of that. But even so, she, despite that, despite the parliamentary superiority, if you like, over the monarchy in many ways, she did have that authority, and those coronation oaths gave her that link, as it were, to something spiritual. So yes, I think that's the essence of it. And I don't know how many of my countrymen consciously know this, but as I say, I think subconsciously it's still there. And I think whether that remains, of course, as the country becomes more and more secular, we'll have to see. But for now, at least, they get that. And in large part, thanks to the Queen herself, as I say, because she was such a Christian with a deep faith.
I tell you, here in the United States, I think a lot of people, and I've been thinking about this for the last maybe 2 days, a lot of people draw comfort from the monarchy in a way that there is a degree of legitimacy in monarchical reign and rule. You know that whether, even if it's constitutional, you know that Prince Charles, and now King Charles III, is legitimately the King of England by this thing called birth. And you understand that the bloodline, and in a way where democratic governments like ours, like England, are very messy and very raucous and very, you know, I mean, you can talk about election scandal. You can talk about, there's always doubts as to the legitimacy of a rule. And that is one of the tasks of democratic governments, is to establish legitimacy. Where with Queen Elizabeth and now Prince Charles, or King Charles III, there is no question of legitimacy. He is the king. And there's some kind of beautiful simplicity in that. Do you think that plays into it at all?
Yes, it does. And it goes back to what I was saying about the whole stability of the monarchy and its the continuity that it gives. And that, you know, the Queen was queen for over 70 years. And that sort of stability at a time when she saw through 15 prime ministers, so 15 different governments during her time. But she always was there, and she was always fulfilling her role to the best she could. And that's what really gave it, gave the country a great amount of stability, not just the country, but the Commonwealth too. So it stretched to all the dominions of the Commonwealth. So yes, I think that's the key part of it. And I think when you have a republic where you have elected presidents, you lose that that constant, that stability that the monarchy gives. Of course, you have other monarchies in the around the world that don't quite have this, even Catholic monarchies like in Spain or Belgium, and they don't have it quite to the extent that England does. And I think that's because England, in Britain rather, the royal family in the country have and the constitution has really sought to preserve that heritage. And in many ways, just to go back again to the coronation and the meaning of the coronation, that deep spiritual element of the coronation, and that sort of that anointing that's done at the ceremony. And I don't think other countries have quite that in such a degree. So So I think that's why the royal family and the monarchy in Britain has that certain separation, as it were, from other monarchies and certainly from a republic.
Well, I got to agree with you, Edward, that nobody does the monarchy quite like England. I mean, they really have preserved it and showcased it as such a welcome part of their heritage. And there'll always be critics on the side. Is this the demise of the monarchy? But that's a question for another day. I have to ask you about Queen Elizabeth's position as head of the Church of England. That's a little harder sometimes for Catholics for us to understand. And you go into a little bit in your article when you wrote the tribute to her about as the church was changing these past couple decades with same-sex marriage and the issues of priests and bishops in the Church of England. But yet she was head of the church but had to kind of not actually give her input when some of these changes came about. How does that all happen there?
Just one thing, and I noticed in King Charles' speech is that he reasserted himself as the head of the Church of England, which was an interesting statement. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, again, it goes back to the constitution in the UK, which is very much geared towards having the democratic will of the people really taking superiority. So the Queen and the royal family, the monarchy does play second place to Parliament and to the will of the people, and that was something that was, as I say, fought out during the Civil War. So it's difficult for a monarch to really, extremely difficult for a monarch to really wield any kind of legislative power. She, as I put in the article, she gives royal assent. That's a sort of formality, as it is with a lot of monarchies across the world. But she doesn't have the ability really to veto anything, like refuse royal assent. And although she, in theory, she could. But if she did, of course, that would bring the whole country into constitutional crisis. And so she saw her coronation oaths as basically preserving the constitution and preserving the way the country works and has always worked, and really that she saw her coronation oaths as fulfilling that. At least that's what I think. I mean, as I put in my article, perhaps we'll know more as time goes on. I know that she wasn't a great fan of same-sex marriage. I think she made that quite clear. She was uneasy with that sort of thing. But of course, she was really powerless to do anything. At least that's how she saw it. But of course, then you get some monarchs who have taken a stand, and Catholic monarchs, and that's probably the difference. The fact is that she was head of the Church of England. She was there to uphold Protestantism. If she were Catholic, it might have been quite different. And it was interesting, in 2008, the King of Luxembourg, which is a Catholic monarchy, he actually did refuse to give royal assent to a bill on euthanasia, and the country took away his ability to give royal assent in the future. They kept the monarchy but took away that privilege. And so I think she thought that she didn't want to go down that route, and of course, not being Catholic, she didn't feel any particular obligation either to do that. But I think she was also not, as her title is, she's Supreme Governor of the Church of England, so she's head of the Church of England in the country. And I think it was just a sort of unthinkable possibility that she would ever go against the Constitution in that way. And so she didn't.
I'm imagining a different timeline where the monarch stands up for, I don't believe in same-sex marriage. But I think you laid out really well the challenges of if she'd gone that way. But it still doesn't sit well. And maybe it's just, you know, the American in me. We like to stand up and make our point is mm-hmm. that if she didn't agree with it, she is the head of the Church of England, that even on a personal note, she would say that somewhere in public, though I'm sure other people within the Church of England kind of had that discussion about same-sex marriage and all those issues that have come up in the last decade or two?
Sorry, you know, I just another point about the Church of England too. Uh-huh. I mean, it's also important to remember that it was basically born out of compromise. It was born out of Henry VIII's wish to compromise on marriage, and it's been compromising ever since. And I think she probably went along with that. She was steeped in the Anglican and tradition, and I think she went along with that very much, sort of muddling along as the Anglican Church does, without really taking a stand. And in a way, it fit well with her particular constitutional position, because it meant that she didn't have to really step in with these things. She didn't feel she had to. But of course, if she were Catholic, if she were tied to Rome and what the Church teaches, I think that would the situation would have been quite different.
Edward, but she wasn't passive, because she met with 15 different prime ministers. I mean, even we saw in the last couple of days of her life giving royal assent to someone like Liz Truss. So her passivity, I don't believe she was a passive woman. I believe she understood her mission, and she fulfilled that lifelong mission of preserving the monarchy, preserving the Constitution. Yes. One thing, I've been to England. I was just to London in the springtime, and I walked past so many empty Anglican churches to go into packed Catholic parishes. So it was really kind of very, very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So don't yes. discount this church. Yeah.
That's true. But I think no, she was certainly not passive, and she made up for it in many other ways, in many different ways. I mean, she did so much for charity. She was a woman of great duty. I mean, sense of duty and obligation and dedication to the country. And I think a lot of, you know, her subjects were very grateful for that and loved her for it. And so whatever she lacked in those things, but I think the way I like to put it is she was limited by those things, because I think she may well have taken a stand on different things had the Constitution been different and had the Anglican Church been different, had she been Catholic even. And so I think it's a bit unfair to really criticize her for that in any major way. I think she did the best she could, and as I say, was as faithful as she could to her coronation oath.
I think too, her longevity. Excuse me, her longevity as a monarch and a reign just kind of infused that whole country. When you think about 96 years, and that most everyone living in England now has never lived under any other monarch as she. And I think just especially these last decade or two, where she had overcome some of the issues of the family and the press and just remained steadfast and elegant and graceful in all the day-to-day drama of the world, that endeared her, because you think about the English and what they're known for, stiff upper lip and carrying on with grace and dignity, and she did all that in spades. And I also think that a couple decades ago, if she had passed earlier, you know, King Charles, Prince Charles at the time, there were a lot of people that were like, well, we don't know if he's up for the task. But I think with time, he's actually, that kind of helped him too, as he grows into this really mature, stepping into the shoes of being a king so late in life. And I'm not sure if England has any ideas about that, or you do on the thought of that.
Yes, no, I agree with you. And I think it's interesting that I remember years ago, Prince Charles saying that he wanted to be defender of faiths instead of defender of the faith, which is the title that goes back to King Henry VIII when Henry VIII was still Catholic. And he wanted the monarchy to be a defender of the faith. And the fact that he wanted to change it to that, I think, was alarmed a lot of people. But as we saw over the changeover and the accession to the throne, he calls himself defender of the faith. So I think he's matured in that way, and I think he sees the Christian faith as really the rightful faith, if you like, for him as the monarch. And so I think you're right. I think he certainly has developed in that. And as you say, I think the longevity of the Queen and the fact that her values became so well entrenched, as it were, not only in the country but in the royal family, I think, although, of course, not all of them followed her example.
Sorry. That's it was American.
That's it for another show, Edward.
But the example, I think, was very strong, and certainly across the country. And those values, she embodied the values of the country. And I think that's also passed on to Charles too, in a perhaps a slower way, but it has. And so I think, yes, I agree with you. I think he could well be a very good monarch who has a lot of continuity with his mother.
And I tell you what Queen Elizabeth represented. And Edward, you need to walk across St. Peter Square and go rattle a few of those boys sitting up there in their palaces and tell them that, you know something? The world needs a mother. They need a mother figure. And we have one. It's called the Holy Mother.
Right.
And she cares for us. And that is, I think, in many ways, she was a secular Holy Mother.
Yes.
In that for people who didn't have access to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And ultimately, our Queen is the Queen of Heaven. And I believe she was just a small fraction of that Queen of Heaven. And like I said, those boys in the Vatican, they've got a good evangelical point if they could ever get off their you-know-whats and actually evangelize. So that's my editorial to Canon Lawyer, who is angry as heck today. So that's more about that later.
I think it's very well put.
Yes.
So looking at the long term, and I've seen the headlines, where does the monarchy go from here? She was the face of the monarchy, the royal family in Great Britain for, let's say, 100 years, face it. But we're looking at a very modern world. We're looking at a very fast-changing world. And I think over the last couple hundred years, the world has figured out where monarchs have a place in democratic governments, and they've done well with it. But England has always shined forth in upholding their monarchy, showcasing it, protecting it. And does the world still want to continue that for the next 100 years? You know, when little Prince George eventually becomes King George in, you know, the late 21st century, whenever that will be. So is the conversation there looking ahead at all of where do we go now?
Well, I think in some ways, I mean, I haven't really been following much of the discussion over in England, but I do think that I think the Queen had a great impact on the country, and so I think that helps preserve the monarchy at least for a time. My only concern is that as the country becomes, and I think it probably will become at least in the short term, more and more secular, that the key, the depth of the monarchy, the key understanding of the monarchy will be lost. And if that happens, then I fear that people will say, well, you know, they're just like us. Why do they have these special privileges? Why are they suddenly born into privilege and have all of these, great advantages that we don't have? And also this sort of religion of egalitarianism that's spread for so long. If that deepens too, then I think the monarchy could be in trouble. So, it's going to be a difficult future, I think, for the monarchy, at least, for the next decade at least. But maybe as hopefully, perhaps if the church evangelizes again in my old country, and perhaps if the church can even become Catholic again, then perhaps they'll have an understanding of the monarchy, which will return. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in that regard.
Do you think a place like France, which let go of their monarchy in the revolution and tried to rejuvenate, countries like that miss having the monarchy as part of their cultural, historical, or even contemporary way that they govern?
Oh, Edward, let me listen. Yeah. Let me answer that one.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I know you have an opinion.
I follow French politics very closely. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they elect a king. Every 5 years, they elect a king. That's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do. It's barely a constitutional government as we understand it the French president has so many more powers than what is usually acceptable in a democratic government. So they elect a king. So England is far more constitutional democracy than France is.
Yes.
See, the Cannon lawyer knew that one. Yes.
No, someone that has lived mm-hmm. in France.
What is interesting, I think, is that among the French, certainly among traditional Catholics in France, I think they very much would like the monarchy back. And it's interesting that that sense of tradition, you know, crosses the church and into the monarchy. And they would love to see, I think, mm-hmm. a return of the ancien regime, as it were. So I think there is certainly a lot of nostalgia for it. Mm-hmm. And of course, the revolution hasn't brought the great things that the monarchy would have brought.
Yeah. Oh, really? Macron? Really?
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
King Macron, yes. Uh-huh.
King Macron, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, yeah. there is an attraction, a respect for the monarchy over here in the United States. Sometimes we don't understand it. We just know that we like this sense of history in America, even though that's why we fought the independence, but we're a young nation, and to look at just a long line of a thousand years of a reign, that kind of thing always is, we find very fascinating here. Any final thoughts, Michelle, before we wrap up?
No, I hope the monarchy lasts, because the monarchy, it does. It represents something that is 70 years for a human being is a long time, and it represents a stability that I think we just crave. But I would like to say that stability doesn't come in secular governments, but it does come with the love of Jesus Christ and His Holy Mother. And that is where our true stability lies.
Edward Penton, always good to read your stuff. You can see in the National Catholic Register all of his work. He's the Rome correspondent there. We appreciate you taking some time and diving into your home country and the historical things going on here today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Susan.
Michelle, always good to talk to you, and we'll talk.
It's always good to talk to you, Miss Ellen.
We'll speak to you next time on Convergence. Have a blessed day.